All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubow. And have you ever wondered how a real estate investor and lawyer juggles multifamily homes, student rentals, flip projects, and more? Today, I've got an expert himself, Sean Quigg of Prosperous Law, here to spill the beans from small wins to a whopping 107% annualized return on investment on a flip project. We're going to dive right in here. Sean, welcome to the show. Thrilled to have you here.
Hey, Bryce, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack here. Let's start kind of at the top. What got you into real estate? We were talking about, it's been since 2015, you said?
Yeah, actually, I got into real estate completely by accident. When I went to law school, I went to Windsor. And instead of renting, I found I had enough to be able to buy a house there. This was back when you could actually buy a house in Windsor
Yeah,
for
it's a little bit more
$130,000.
expensive now,
Yeah. So that's what I did. I bought a 5-bedroom house for $133,000 and I rented out the other rooms to students. So I didn't realize what I was doing. I didn't realize what house hacking was or that this was a, you know, the first step in my journey. But, you know, before I knew it, I was cash flowing, which is important because one of the key ingredients to getting through law school is beer money and beer. So that's what it got me. You know, I liked it so much that I ended up taking what resources I did have available to me and getting a second place. But I learned my lesson. I bought way close to school. I bought a bigger house. And before you knew it, you know, I'm in my second year of sort of grad school. And I had two houses. And it sort of just grew from there.
Did you end up moving out of the one into the other so you could take advantage of the lower down payment?
No, I didn't. I actually preferred the first house. So, you know, we talked about, you know, moving into that spot, but it made more sense to leave the much more rentable house for renters than the other place. And I liked my place.
You still own those two properties today?
No, I sold the first one when I was done school. Did pretty well on that. And then just sold the second one in August of 2023. So just recently. And, you know, I hung on to that one for 6 years and it did very well, even through COVID.
Yeah. Well, the pricing in Windsor really went through the roof. I would say like 2017, 2018 is when people started saying, well, I like the pricing in Detroit, but I don't want to be in Detroit. So I'll just be on the other side of the bridge. And I'll buy some property there. And there's a lot of older properties, but bigger properties. And so a lot of people did follow that student housing. You know, there's a lot of rental property in Windsor, a few people who actually live there, but quite a bit of student rental. So after you got the law degree and you eventually moved out of there, what have you been doing in real estate since?
Well, it all goes back to, you know, an investment meetup I went to. I was invited to just sort of randomly, and I learned about the Burr strategy. I'd never heard of the Burr strategy. I thought, you know, real estate investing is pretty cool. I'm making some cash flow. I should probably take this seriously. But then I learned about the Burr, and sort of my world changed. I was like, I got to do this. So, I started reading the books. I started listening to the podcast. I started listening to Dave. And a bunch of other, you know, really great shows, and started to take action, you know, and that grew slowly from trying to board more student rentals to going, student rentals are kind of like multifamily, but just one door and they're a big headache to finance. So why not just go right to multifamily? So that's what I did. And I transitioned, you know, I bought a 5 and a 7 pretty quickly, got those somewhat optimized, got cash flowing. And then continued on with a few other projects, got into the flipping, flipping started about a year ago, and done some wholesaling and some other things. So it's been a wild ride.
So how are you finding the flip market in this latest, we'll call it the latest economy?
Well, the thing about flipping in today's economic climate is it's still very possible. It's just more challenging. And if there was ever a time where making money on the buy was important, it is now. You cannot flip properties in a down market if you are not making money on the buy. And with the two projects that our company's taken on so far, we made money in the buy, no question about it. Both deals were bought off of wholesalers. We did them right. And one of them, as you mentioned at the top, ended up with 107% annualized return on investment for our money partners, which is tremendous. They were very happy. The other one, we've had a few speed bumps along the way. We're still working on it. It looks like we're going to have to transition, but not because of the buy, not because of the project, but a few other things that occurred along the way.
So it's, usually it's like over budget, and then you end up eating your own lunch where you have a flip and you're like, you know what, I'll just burr it, and then in a couple of years I'll sell it then. So there's always an exit strategy for flipping. You end up with a really nice a really nice product, and you kind of feel like, oh, these renters are going to come in and like kind of ding it up a bit. But it kind of goes with the economy right now. Things, I think you really nailed it. You can't be guessing that we're going to get appreciation and this thing's going to flip right out and we're going to get all this stuff. No, you got to make sure that you buy right. It's never been more important than in the past. So, people have been in the business for a few years now. You're coming up on, I think, 8 or 9 years. What is one thing you would say comes easy to you that other people might find difficult to do?
Well, I'm pretty good at understanding the legal side of real estate law and contractual law, and obviously because I am a lawyer. And so when it comes to structuring deals, working on creative deals, working on terms that are creative, that's second nature for me because it's what I do all day. And so, which makes helping clients accomplish those things also fun and rewarding and fulfilling, because it's, applying that skill set and helping others with it.
So in the next like 12 months, what kind of future aspirations do you have to kind of grow the business? Still flipping, adding more multi-unit. What's the next 12 months kind of look like for you guys?
Great question. So, in the next 12 months, we're looking at doing a few things. Ramping up the flip company to a point where it's not a project-based company, but a systems-based company. Right now we're doing this flip, this project and this project. But there's no flow and there's no consistency. And what my business partner and I sort of sat down and talked about was, it's because we're focusing on projects and not on flow. And not on creating a business that happens to sell houses that have recently been renovated. Instead, we're a flipping company. And so we're sort of turning the turnstile, in essence, to say, okay, we gotta get through the project-based phase and into flow phase. And so that's big on our list for the flipping company. On multifamily, it's back to basics. I'm offloading the t two. Well, I've offloaded one of the assets already, and the other one is going to get offloaded. And we're going to take that capital and sort of play Monopoly with it. Go from a 5 to 7 to a 20, and maybe some more, right? And really try and get the economies of scale that come with more doors.
Yeah, definitely. I think you nailed it on the flip business. It's like, it's a perspective. Just not calling it a flip business is a start, because it is a pipe. In my experience, and with what I've been taught about it over the years, is it's like a pipeline business. It's got a system, it's got expectations. There's a business model that you lay out on each project with uniform. This is the paint color of this year, and the design runs in every house we do. We would do the same thing. So really it is, there's some people who take it in a project by project basis, but I feel like those are like the luxury flippers, where it's really about a keen, like, it's got to be exactly like this for this house. Whereas like flipping, if you can get into the systems, can be really like profitable pipeline business. So are you looking locally for your multifamilies that you're looking at, or where are you kind of looking as far as that next acquisition?
Well, our multifamily business is all in New Brunswick, and we're going to continue looking there. I like the fundamentals of New Brunswick, when it comes to, rent on a per door basis compared to cost on a per door basis. As a really high level metric, those numbers make sense. Also, there's a lot of room for improvement of the assets that exist presently in New York, in New Brunswick, sorry. And lots of people figure that out, but that's great because the more value added there is in the various cities in New Brunswick, whether it's St. John or Fredericton or Moncton or Bathurst or wherever it might be, the more value we bring, then the more value the buildings have. And so we're going to continue on in New Brunswick.
Yeah, definitely. There was a big wave of people heading out that way. Then they kind of played with the rent control a little bit, which kind of
Little
sent
bit.
some people, got some people a little bit upset. But what I really do love about that market is, like what you're saying, there's a lot of value add still to be had because people haven't been historically going out there looking for things. So you'll find an old, 25 or 30 unit building that maybe hasn't been touched since the 70s or something like that.
That's right.
Fairly well maintenanced, everything original from the last time they turned it. But that really gives you that lift. Are you burying your multifamilies? Is that the plan to kind of get enough lift that you can get in and get out?
Oh yeah, it's the value add strategy permeates through everything that we do because parking money into a perfect asset or a turnkey asset just for me just doesn't make sense. It might make sense in certain circumstances where I'm the passive partner or we're getting a screaming deal on something that's done, but I like the value add. I'm sure it's the same for you and probably the same for many listeners. Value is where it's at, and there's so much to be had. And just when it's all done, it's going to start all over again.
So how do you manage these value adds out of your local market? Are you living out of New Brunswick these days?
No, I still live in Ontario, and it comes down to having a great team. It comes down to having people you can trust, getting out there when I can, and staying on top of them. And making sure this is what's happening and it's on schedule and it's on budget. So it comes down to building a trusting team. There's no doubt about it. I couldn't do what we want to do in New Brunswick without it.
Yeah, it's definitely the team. Like, at a remote, that's what really keeps a lot of people from investing remotely, is they're worried, okay, I want to be able to touch it. I want to go there every day. And it's just like, you have to be comfortable with trusting the team that's going to execute it. How often would you say someone who's thinking about investing out of market needs to actually attend their properties, especially in the construction phase?
I think that's entirely dependent on the results you're getting. So if it were me and I was doing my very first out of province project or out of town project, I would want to be having regular video meetings, 2 to 3 times a week. Just take me through, show me what's been done. Send me a list of things, this bullet point by email or by text or whatever it might be. Every day, at the end of the day, what'd you get done? What'd you want to get done? What's up for tomorrow? Right? Build that sense of accountability into your team, and but then trust them to do the work, right? It goes both ways. Be flexible, but don't be taken advantage of. And if you're not getting the results, go out there. But I think with an iPhone and some notes, you don't need to go at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of software too that can help you connect with your contracting team. The only challenge that I've found, and maybe you can speak to this, is contractors aren't the most tech savvy guys. They might even be on a flip phone. They're like sending you pictures that look like they were taken with a potato. So how do you navigate the tech challenges of your crew to actually get you those photos, get you those updates? Have you had those challenges, or you have pretty much smooth with the guy you're working with these days?
Yeah, I've never had a challenge like that. And frankly, that's not the type of person I would choose to work with. They can be great at what they're doing, but if I can't communicate with them effectively in a way that I need to run that business, then that's not the person for me. That's a person to help people who are local to that market. And that's
They're
fair.
gonna
They
stop
can
by.
show up, right? They can show up. Or if you really need this company to do the renos, hire a project manager that manages the
Property
project.
manager too. I've also had success in out of markets getting my main realtor to pop in and check up on them. You know, find someone in the market to kind of check up on your team if you're having challenges with the updates. So what would you say with all that's going on, you know, in the market and with the things you're doing these days, what would you say your biggest obstacle is as you go into this 2024?
Well, I'm finding that raising capital has become more challenging. You know, it seems like equity investors are either on pause or moving to debt. They would rather have the security and the lower ROI in exchange for peace of mind, really.
That they're not really in the deal.
That's right. And I'm also seeing the debt investors tighten up, lower loan to values, lower willingness to lend, more stringent on the terms, less forgiving, less likely to renew. Right? People are scared, right? And
Well, they're
so,
getting orders too, right? And it's the other
yeah.
day someone was saying, "Ah, the bank didn't get me the financing for XYZ." And I was like, "It's a business decision. It's not you, man.
That's
it's a
right.
business decision that they're making to hedge their capital, which is ultimately, you know, the grandma's capital that's sitting in her bank account for 30K. They're not so keen on lending it when they're seeing that instability in the marketplace. So how are you navigating that challenge? What are you doing to, you know, press on?
Well, I'm in a phase of defense. So I'm not raising as much capital as I was, say, 6 months ago. But I'm seeing clients struggle. And so what I'm encouraging my clients to do is to not stop at no. If it's no with this broker, let's talk to this one. If it's no with this lender, let's talk to this one. Don't give up. Their money is a commodity. Your dollar's worth the exact same as mine. And there is a ton of capital out there. Someone's going to want to do this. May not be on great terms. Right. And we
That's the
all
other
know
thing.
the terms are more than just the interest rate. And if you're a listener and you haven't read the full commitment, then you may want to do that. Because terms are more than interest rate. But keep trying, keep going, keep asking. The worst thing that can happen is no. And then you just keep going. There's enough money out there, you will find someone.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, a lesson to listen along is like a lot of people get shut down by an A lender, like a bank, and they're like, well, I guess it's not in the cards, but there's still B class lenders, you know, credit unions, etc. You know, try the local. You know, if you're in Ontario and you're looking, like, try to find a credit union that's like, I don't know, Sudbury Credit Union, whatever. They're most interested in investing in Sudbury. So, like, while Royal Bank might shut you down, the small credit unions or a B lender might actually do it. Or if you have to get even further down, there's mortgage brokers that can find really creative things. And again, like you mentioned, you might not like the terms and you should probably read the whole thing. But you can still get into the deal. You just might not like on the terms in which you're, you know, you might not be in love with the terms, but getting into the deal might be more important than and not. So let's talk a little bit about your the two things that you have going on to kind of help real estate investors. So you've got Prosperous Law, which is a real estate only law firm. Tell us a little bit about that and your involvement in that
Sure.
business.
Yeah, I launched Prosperous Law in July of 2023, and it is a law firm only for real estate investors. And we're here to create impact. The firm is built on three pillars, and the biggest, the strongest one, the foundation is impact. How can we create an impact on the lives of our clients and their businesses. And you know, that's our driving force. So I'll give you an example. Someone came to me and they needed help with something. I didn't know how to do it. I couldn't help them. So I went and found someone who could and then introduced them. That's impact, right? Because that problem solved. I didn't just say, hey, like, sorry.
Yeah, I can't help you.
Yeah, exactly. That's our compass, our North Star, our driving force. And it's been awesome. It's been really cool to see, you know, that transition from, you know, if you're a real estate investor, you know you need a lawyer. And for the longest time, lawyers for real estate investors have been a necessary component of their business, but not a true value add. And that's what we're trying to change. Like, we're trying to be the value add. We're trying to create systems and ideas and concepts that teach and offer different ways of approaching problems, creativity, etc. And so it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, because that's the one thing, pretty much every lawyer can process a transaction. But what happens when things get sticky? Will they have the advice to make sure that it transacts? You know, maybe they put their hands up and say, no, I don't know. You're gonna have to figure it out. You know, I can't help you with that. Or maybe they're the lawyer, you know, all the love to all the lawyers out there, but maybe they're the deal killer lawyer, the one that is always killing your deals because he doesn't like some term on the second page at the bottom, whereas they're just uncomfortable with it and they kill the deal. They're like, no, you shouldn't do this deal. And that's the advice that you're getting from someone who's not actually a real estate specialist. So, you know, I've dealt with both of those types of lawyers. I like to think my lawyer is relatively real estate savvy and that he has my best interests in mind, but it's not a real estate only law firm. It's a law firm. So, what would you say the biggest difference would be if someone was to come to your to you to help them with their real estate transaction versus, you know, other law firm number seven?
Well, you know, we only help real estate investors. And to work at the firm, you know, a person's got to be an investor themselves or have experience in investing in some capacity, or they've got to get trained on real estate investing strategies. And I'm very intentional about this because I want everyone who is here to be able to have business conversations with our clients to be able to speak the same language. And when you start to speak the same language, you start to foresee and be able to implement what you've learned in law, what you've learned in the legal sphere to these business scenarios. And then be able to apply what you've learned to help create either an opportunity, avoid an issue, or create a win-win, or find a creative solution to something that looked like it had no solution. And that's the fun part, right? You said it. Any lawyer can do a real estate transaction, but are they the right lawyer for you if if they're also helping someone buy their forever home? I don't know. I mean, I don't think so, but
There's a lot of
okay.
challenges to navigate when closing deals, you know, and not everything closes on time. The money doesn't always show up on time. The other party might have cold feet. They might be, you know, you might have a challenge with the way that the deal came out, or you're trying to get some particular protection in the acquisition as you bring a private contract that didn't have a real estate agent on it. There is a lot of particulars in the real estate business on that transaction side that I feel it's really important that, you know, that the lawyer you use is there to help you with that. But I've always found, you know, as a real estate investor, maybe you can speak to this as well, as a real estate investor, I'm always excited. I'm like, let's put this deal together. Let's get the paperwork. Let's get it to the lawyers. Let's do this. And the first thing my lawyer is always saying, he says, Bryce, what if it doesn't go right? And then he's like, your contract doesn't have any contingencies for if it doesn't go good. And then he'll start working on that. So like that really, that protection angle is what I find most valuable from a lawyer.
You're so right. And in at least in Ontario, there's only a few of us who really work with investors, right? Tony was on a few weeks ago. Tony's a great guy. There's a few others, and whether it's us or whether it's Tony or someone else, doesn't matter. Find a lawyer who works with investors, who is an investor, because they speak the language, they understand what you're doing, and they can help you get to the other side. Like, they can help you get it done in a way that actually works for you, that solves problems for you, that does something good for you in your life and your business. And so, yeah, it's such a good point.
So with the other thing we were talking about before the show, you have a funding project or a business. I don't know what you want to call it, a project or a business. Businesses always seem to start as projects for me. So you've got this emerging idea here about, I'm just going to let you talk about it. It's financing deposits. Tell
That's
people a little
right.
bit more about that.
Okay, well, the company is called Upfront Capital. And Upfront Capital helps people put deposits down during their conditional period. And when I say people, I really should say companies. And because we help on bigger deals. Right. We help people who are buying land to build on, or land to develop and sell to a builder, or sell to, someone who wants to build. We help people acquire large commercial multifamily or, commercial industrial. We help people who are buying businesses, whether it's shares or assets, really anybody who's doing something bigger, who doesn't want to park money in trust for 30, 60, 90 days while they do their due diligence. And, there's a number of reasons why you would want that help. Number one, you don't have it. But this is a good deal, and I got to put up 250,000 as a deposit. Or you have 250,000, but you've also got to pay your staff
Yeah, there's
to,
payrolls coming up.
hire geotechnical and environmental and consultants and all the rest of it, right? Or do the roof thing and do the HVAC and mechanical and other things. Those things cost money. The other thing is, investors generally don't want to put money down for deposits because there's absolutely no ROI. And because there's zero ROI, especially today, we know that there's actually a negative ROI for that 30, 60, 90 days, right? They actually lose money to inflation by parking money in a trust account. So
Right,
that's
because
what Upfront does.
it could be
That's
deployed
right.
somewhere. 250
That's
could,
exactly right. So we do
buy
it.
a house in the East Coast somewhere. You could probably buy a couple.
That's right.
So how does it work in the micro of the whole thing? Like, why would a company like yourself put up a deposit for a multifamily for a guy like me and say, oh, I'm looking at this thing, it's 250. How does that work? What's the advantage to both sides? For me, obviously the advantage is I don't have to come up with the money, but what's the intrinsic? There's got to be something in it for you guys.
Well, yeah. So our company makes a lender fee and charges interest. Now, our
On
interest is
those
charged.
30 days or 90 days or
That's
whatever.
right. Yeah. So, the lender fee ranges depending on a few things in the deal. The interest rate ranges depending on a few things in the deal. But instead of putting up your $250,000 deposit, you might be putting up $5,000 or $10,000, which is much more manageable. You don't need a mortgage. We don't need a mortgage. We don't really underwrite the deal itself because the loan is due back before you go firm, before you waive your conditions, before you say, I've done my due diligence and we're good to proceed. So that due diligence period allows you to do your due diligence and to raise your capital and raise sufficient capital in order to be able to take out the deposit loan. The seller never knows, right? We don't send the money to the seller's lawyer, we send it to your lawyer. That's the borrower. And we can fund pretty quickly. Like, if we're working together, and this is how first it's the first stage is we make sure that the agreement of purchase and sale says what we need it to say, and the things we need in that deal do not impact the seller at all, so they'll never object to it. It actually impacts the buyer, but not in a way that hurts the buyer unless they were going to try and steal our loan money.
Which will be pretty tough in any
Pretty
case.
tough. And not likely. So, we help you draft the agreement, at least the portions that we need to see. Then we give you everything we need. We give you advance notice. We work directly with your lawyer if you want. We tell him, hey, we need XYZ. And then we prepare the loan documents. You go out, get those signed with your lawyer. They come back. If they're satisfactory, perfect. We send the money to your lawyer. Your lawyer sends it to the seller's lawyer to hold in trust. And that money never leaves trust. When you're ready to waive conditions, let's say you borrowed 250,000, great. That 250,000 stays in the seller's lawyer's trust account. You just put 250 in your lawyer's account who sends it to me. And then the loan's done and we're all good. If you don't have it or you can't raise it, then you just get out of the deal. The deposit flows back and it comes back to us.
And then you likely have to, you're still definitely on the hook for the interest, et cetera, because you're borrowing money for like a, it's almost like a bridge, a deposit bridge loan.
It
You're like, I don't
is.
really have the
It is a
money,
bridge loan.
but I'll pay to park someone else's money while I raise the capital, because that's really what it is. When you have something you want to lock it up, you they want a deposit typically to consider your due diligence. And if you're a wholesaler or if you're just getting started in the multifamily, you probably don't have access to the capital as quickly as you have to go and raise it. So it definitely
Okay.
would solve the challenge of they're wanting a deposit today, says the realtor, and you say, well, I'm a little short on the 250,000. They're like, how short? You say 250,000.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a that's an interesting an I interesting idea, especially in the multifamily. And well, look at the price of a house in Toronto. You might even be using it to put down your initial deposit as you sort out ways to unlock equity and other things to actually put down your truest deposit. So I like the idea. I think people are going to be able to take a lot of value out of that. Now, you know, if you were to start all over again, you wanted to, you know, go back to the beginning in real estate, what would you do different, if anything?
Oh gosh. At the start, I wasn't that invested. I learned a little bit. I would read a book, listen to a few shows. It took a while for that momentum to pick up. If I could go back today, I would consume it all right away. But I'd give myself a limit, like 3 months, couple months, and then it's action time. Second thing I'd do, I was so afraid of private money when I started. We talked about this off the top, right? If, oh, the aid lender says no, then I guess this is done. That was me when I first started, right? I was only looking at institutional money. Now I know private money is the best thing ever. And but that lesson is a lesson that is, learned over time. Even if you have a coach or mentor, that's a tough lesson. But if I could go back now, I'd private money all the way right away.
Right out the gate.
But the down you know it was not the downside, but the thing with private money is there's got to be an exit, and it's got to be pretty close to guaranteed,
Yeah, it's got to be
otherwise you run
certain
into
or they're going to
problems.
come in. There's an exit, you know, Sean. There's always an exit for private money, and they'll come and exit that deal for you. So, there's always an exit. Just let's reframe that and say, make sure you have an exit on your own terms.
Yeah,
Because
that's
in
good.
those documents that you were referring to earlier, that you should read thoroughly when taking on hard money loans, et cetera, there is an exit stipulated in the contract should you fail to exit your deal.
That's right.
Now, if people want to connect with you, they want to find out more about the companies and ultimately the law firm, as well as the deposit, or just to connect with you personally, what should they do? How do they find you?
Oh, okay. So you can find me on socials, Instagram, I'm Sean SP Quigg, the REI lawyer, and at Prosperous Law. You can send me an email, Sean at prosperouslaw.ca. We've got a text line. I send out an email every day to the list with transactional tips, legal tips, entrepreneurial stuff. You can find us on the website. There's a ton of ways to get a hold of me. Find some way. We'll set up a call and we'll have a good chat about real estate.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I really appreciate the tips, and you know, anyone who stuck around all the way through, they definitely got their value out today. I really appreciate your time, Sean.
Thanks, Bryce.
Awesome. Until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.